Hey guys, welcome to episode 24 of the JV Club. I'm recording this at work at the HuffPost Live offices, and I'm not using my normal microphone gear, so it's probably going to sound like complete garbage. I apologize, but I just wanted to get this out to you guys. I'm still at work. It's Wednesday night. I got to get this over to Katie. So if you hear some ambient noise, it's because I'm at the office. You might even hear some other people's voices. Some people might walk up to me not realizing that I'm recording. But I really hope that you enjoy episode 24. I recorded it a few months ago with my dear friend Suzanne Santo. Honey Honey is a fantastic band. You will be hearing more from them as they continue to blow up. I guarantee you it's going to happen. We had a very nice time speaking, and you guys are about to hear one of my favorite songs, which is called Old School Friends, and it seems very apropos for the JV Club. And then we'll also close out with another song at the end. But I definitely encourage you to check out more Honey Honey, and I hope you like it. And I want to get into some shout-outs. I hope I haven't missed too many people. I think I've got a pretty long list. So, or maybe I already, some of these guys I may have already shouted out. I'm so mixed up, guys, because I have so much going on with work. But, yeah, I think I already covered a lot of these. Shoot. Greg L., Nick, Ariel, Moof. Yeah, because I said Moof last time, I remember. Amanda, Wade, Robert, Michael M. This is a travesty, guys. I'm so behind in my shout-outs. I wrote down some, and I'm going to read those. I wrote them down in a different place. Albert, Chris McSee, someone I went to school with. Jody put some money into the Selling Kickstarter campaign, which I appreciate so much. I'm so excited for that movie to get some limited theatrical release. And I wanted also to, I tweeted this earlier, but Tom L. did a lovely YouTube clip that he, it was an animated doodle based on the Maria Bamford episode, and it was so terrific, and I loved it, and I will post it on the Facebook page as well. Thank you guys so much, and keep those comments coming. I am so behind, clearly, in shout-outs that I got to get it together, but I thank you for putting up with me, because this job has been a joy, and it's been very time-consuming. But I think there was something else I wanted to say. I can't remember what it is. I send you all my best, and I've got some really fun episodes coming up that I'm very excited about as well. So I will talk to you guys very soon. Okay.
Now entering Nerdist.com.
My friends, my old school friends, the ones that I've known all my life. I spent so long pushing their love away, now it cuts and it bites. I had this dream that I saw all of them, and we talked, but we knew that we changed. Some had seen money, some had seen death, but none of them were the same. I want them back, I want them back, I want to feel the love again. I want them back, I want them back, I want to be with my old friends. I can't forget getting drunk in the woods with some stolen from the market shelf. I drank a whole plastic cherry coke bottle full of wine, and I thought I'd kill myself. I want them back, I want them back, I want to feel the love again. I want them back, I want them back, I want to be with my old friends. Kissing the same girls, taking their sweet pearls and giving ours away at the same time. Man, I turn each memory into this perfect summertime. Every day. Oh.
everybody. Well, as you just heard, and I was going to say, I hope you enjoyed, but I'm going to just jump right into, I am assuming, and nay, I am sure you enjoyed the song that that I just played. And of course, that was Honey Honey, Old School Friends. And I'm sure fans of the podcast who have listened to other episodes understand why it was just so important and necessary that I picked that song in particular to start things off with, because it might as well be the theme of the podcast. And to be honest with you, I actually considered having it be the theme of the podcast. But then I felt like I needed something that was just instrumental. So that's a lot of recapping on just one song. Suzanne Whoa. Santo, I welcome you in.
Oh, hello, Janet Vernon.
The JV Club.
That was a very bold assumption. Old school friends. What if people don't like their old school friends? That could be a problem.
Then I'll tell you, the people that don't miss their old school friends are nostalgic, wishing they did miss their old school friends based on your song.
Well, you
so
know,
everyone
wins. We can also have it open to the new school friends as well.
Yeah, maybe you should redo the entire song. I think
I'm already rethinking the entire record.
I'm glad we've uncovered this giant mistake that you have in your songwriting. Suzanne, thank you so much for joining the podcast.
Thanks for having me. This is awesome.
You are in between performances. You just came off of a weekend at Coachella.
I did.
And that's extremely exciting. It was such a big deal when you told me that that you guys had gotten in and that, you know, that you were invited. And it's really great. I mean, right? That's a pretty
big deal. Oh, man, it's incredible.
Deal.
And the first time I ever went to Coachella, I was actually working in the VIP section selling barbecue. And I had like, you know, you don't work the entire day, so you can go like see your bands that you want to see. And I remember thinking, holy shit, that'd be really cool, you know?
Yeah, but you were definitely already playing music.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Point.
No, we were already touring and in and out of town. And, you know, as you know, that's kind of, it's not the right field if you're looking for a consistent income.
So, of course, I was like
$300 on barbecue at Coachella. Yeah, bring it.
Right.
I'm going to stop at Morongo on the way. Play a little blackjack. I don't know. But it was so crazy, you know, when we found out later last year, they kind of confirm you, you know, pretty far.
I'm sure, because they have so many balls in the air that they have to like figure out with programming and
so
stuff.
I found out like months ago that we were playing, and then you couldn't, you know, release it until later. And I was like, I couldn't believe it. And having gone this past weekend and how crazy it was of an experience, I'm so honored. And, you know, it's really cool that you get to do two weekends in a row this year.
Yeah.
So that, like, we can better ourselves. We took notes. You know, we kind of, you get a little, you know, the lay of the land going on.
Sure.
And so I feel like next weekend, for most of the bands across the board, will probably be kind of kicked up a level, just because, you know, you always, well, I don't know. I want to do my best. And I'm sure that you want to keep the fans coming.
Sure.
So, and it's kind of cool to switch up your set, so there's a little bit of a variation. Everyone's like, I already saw this one last week. This band, Honey Honey.
No one's going to say that. They're going to be like, oh, I love that one song and I wanted to hear it again, but then they played a totally other song that blew my mind also, and it'll just be like a set of, I don't think you can really go wrong. This is not a podcast about the current day-to-day of the band now or of your life now, mm-hmm. although I think we'll be touching in on that. But I also know that you've been doing a lot of radio interviews and stuff, and probably that is all you've been talking about. So we like to take it back.
I like to rewind.
And I am going to start out by saying that, of course, I know where you're from. Because you have great pride about where you're from.
I do.
And I think you should tell the nice folks at home or in their cars where that is
in your cars or your homes, and perhaps you're even in the mystical Midwestern oasis that is Cleveland. But I'm actually from a suburb of Cleveland.
If anyone is from Cleveland listening to this, I invite you to give me a shout out on JV the Facebook page.
C-Town. Mm-hmm. Go Browns. I was born in a burb called Parma, which is, you know, 20 minutes from Cleveland, or depending on where you want to go downtown. And then later in like junior high, my folks moved to another town that was a little bit farther called Strongsville, which is where they reside now.
Strongsville?
So when I go home, I go to Strongsville.
Strongsville sounds like it's part of a...
Oh, it's just, it's
It
chipper.
Sounds like, yeah, it's, it just, it's it sounds swell. Like the name in a musical or something.
It's really Swell is what
that
it is.
That is perfect.
There's
is
a
perfect.
Great big mall. There's like a Houlihan's and an Applebee's, that kind of thing.
All
and
they the really,
they make it shine. Oh yeah.
Strongsville.
There's a Target and a Best Buy.
It's almost like Casey, like, I don't know why I'm thinking of like the Casey Jr., like Casey, like Caseyville, like just some place that sounds
Maybe
like there should
ville.
Be some strong. Yeah.
Yeah.
Like Strongsville versus their evil neighbors.
Evil's yeah, exactly.
Town.
Long
Evilton.
Island.
Well, there you go.
There's quite a difference.
Yeah.
Well, it's a really interesting place. Like Parma was a very blue collar working class, you know, lots of like every neighbor, it's like neighborhoods, you know, mm-hmm. developments. And Strongsville is similar with the development aspect. But when you're like from my parents' house, like a mile up this way, it's all farmland. So my friends that lived in Brunswick, which is the adjacent town, they had like drive your tractor to school day. And then like, it was weird, you know, there's
I can
so
only
much...
assume that over there you weren't allowed to dance. Is that the town from Footloose?
You weren't allowed to dance. That's funny. Well, no, you could dance, but I went to Catholic high school and there, if you were dancing too close, like the supervisors or the teachers would say, make room for the Holy Spirit. And they would come
that
in between.
That really
you.
Happens.
Oh,
I missed
yes.
out on that. I missed out on make room for the Holy Spirit.
That was more when we were younger, like in junior high, or I went to a Christian camp once. Those are some dark times. But that, like when you're in high school,
that forms character.
We couldn't keep our hands off each other. What were they going to do? I mean, come on.
Of course. when you said Parma, I immediately assumed, I was in my mind, I was thinking, oh, maybe it's like a little Italian settlement because it almost sounded like it could be.
Funny.
And that's me trying to connect too many dots because I know that
More
your family
Polish.
Is Italian.
But yeah. here's a little buzz marketing for you. Drew Carey, his show is based off of Parma.
Oh,
that was like the shtick. And when I listeners, yeah, I ran into Drew Carey once at Swingers in Los Angeles.
Perfect.
And I introduced myself and I told him I loved him and he seemed to be receptive. He didn't reciprocate and that's fine because I came on a little strong, but
he's a pretty mellow
so
guy.
Nice.
Yeah.
And I was so proud and excited to meet him because he's done a lot of great things for our town.
And then I follow you both on Twitter. You know that I know Drew and I do improv with him
so
sometimes.
Cool.
And I follow you both on Twitter and I was so excited to see him retweet.
Janet, how
about
can you
the fact that
how
you're both
can
from
we
Cleveland?
How can we make this work for me and Drew?
We're going to. Give it time.
Okay.
I am already, I don't know that I don't have like a secret room with a billboard and a bunch of pictures and like arrows and strings.
Yes, you
that
do.
I don't have
don't
a master
lie
plan.
To the people.
I don't have a mastermind master plan quite yet, but it's inevitable that you and Drew Carey will cross paths again.
Oh, yes.
It's going to happen. And your family consists of your mom and your dad who are still together.
Yeah. Yes, ma'am.
And?
And I have three sisters. And I always think about this being so interesting, but all four of us are born in January.
Oh, that
but,
is interesting.
But, you know, if you read into it too much, then you get into that uncomfortable conversation of, oh, your folks are really getting it on in April.
Right.
Yeah, and that's not cool. We don't want to hear
about
that.
Something about April, though. It's hard not to
My dad's
think.
Birthday's in April.
Oh, that's amazing!
Gross.
I mean...
So gross.
The birds and the bees. That's really funny.
I'm going to need to excuse myself
That's
and vomit.
That's really funny.
But
wow,
yes.
Was that hard? Of just like, did you all get sort of your time to feel special when you're all your birthdays?
Well,
the same
it was
year,
always, first of all, Ohio was cold, so nobody had a pool party. I was always envious of summer kids, summer
sure.
birthdays, because they had, you know, pool parties and like, you know, slip and slides. And we didn't get to do that. It was either an ice skating rink or an indoor dance party involving CC Music Factory. Or some sort of Paula Abdul hit of the 90s.
There were so many.
There were
so
many.
Many.
Oh, my God. I just remember, like, everybody dance now. It's like, motherfucking say my
on the ice. On the ice.
But that was when, like, the parents got in. Usually, I just remember when I was a kid, my folks and all their friends, they're real big boozers. They would have Yahtzee parties, you know what I mean? And all the kids would be sent to one house and somebody would, like, grandparents would watch us. And my parents would just party down. And so, like, our birthday parties always ended up with an entire, like, house party of dancing people. And, like, this old house that we lived in had this big wooden floor in the living room, and that became the dance floor. And, you know, that was really fun to like slide across with your socks on and just like get down. Those sure. were, but they were big birthday parties, and there was lots of cake in January.
I was going to say, and did you ever combine birthday parties, or did you each get your own party? Well, where do you fall? Sorry, it's a two-parter.
I'm the youngest, our birthdays are the 5th, the 17th, the 20th, and the 29th. And so it's pretty spaced out. And one of my sisters is my half-sister, so she actually grew up in another house. But now we have joint birthday gatherings and celebrations. We call it the January Club.
As you should. As you should.
But it's really cool. And
and you're really still very close with your family.
Very close. Yeah. No, it's tough because we all live in different places. I have one sister that lives out here, which is really cool. But you know, it's always like this fantasy of mine that one day we'll be in close proximity and like, you know, it's like when you go home for the holidays, it's kind of stressful.
Yeah.
Because you have to cram all these, like you have to like get your quality time in, and it becomes so strenuous. And then you're like, I'm hanging out with you, Mom, and we're having coffee and it's great.
We're going to get the most out of this holiday.
But what would be so cool is if it was like this, switch to, hey, Mom, let's have some coffee. This is awesome. All right. I'll see you guys this weekend. We're having dinner. Yeah. Okay, great. I'm going to bring my friend Janet Varney. I'm so glad you guys moved to Santa Barbara. You know,
that does sound nice. I like Santa Barbara.
I'm just
now that I'm involved in this
trying
plan
to manifest my hopes and dreams.
You never know.
Here on your podcast.
It's entirely possible your parents will listen to this podcast and make the decision.
But what we need to do is make them think that it was their idea. And then we're set.
Yeah. I think I actually heard you say a couple months ago that your parents were talking about moving to Santa Barbara. Does that count? Am I making it seem like it was their idea?
No, they talk about moving somewhere near Las Vegas, which is a big no-no for them.
No, I'm pretty sure they said Santa Barbara.
Did they say Santa Barbara?
This is me trying to make it seem like it's their idea.
Oh, I was taking you so literally. Oh, there goes our master plan.
January Club. So growing up outside Cleveland.
Yes, ma'am.
What was your high school like?
My high school life was interesting.
Did you say you went to Catholic school?
I did. Okay. Yeah.
Was it all girls or was it Catholic?
No, there were some boys. There were very attractive boys. Oh. I was there my freshman and sophomore year. And my junior year, I moved to New York City. So like my normal kid lifestyle switched very abruptly at the age of 16. And it was all a choice. You know, my parents, my family are incredible people and they're incredibly supportive. And at the time I was modeling and I had opportunities in New York City to work as a catalog model. And I did very well, you know, for the time, mm-hmm. That I was involved in the business. But, my parents, like when I think about it, how crazy that was that they were like, all right, we think that you can do whatever you want and you support you.
You moved all by yourself or
no,
how did that work?
My first year I was there, I lived with two other students in high school and our parents alternated on supervising. So there was always one adult there. But let me tell you, when I was like, hey, I'm sleeping at so-and-so's house, I was at the bars drinking and I was 16.
Okay. So you did. You really
went. I was just out and about. Like it was crazy. And I was a model. So I would go to these, like you have access to these swanky parties. And I remember being on a couch dancing, like standing on a couch dancing next to Justin Timberlake and being like, this is crazy. And then like going home and like not sleeping for days because I was just like naturally high off of the experience.
Sure.
And it being this like weird, but I'll tell you something. From my normal high school, you know, growing up in Ohio, which I had a blast, I played soccer. I still have some incredibly close friends that like lifelong buddies. Going from that to this other lifestyle, which essentially, you know, then when I started to struggle with the business and like needed to get a side job, like I had this moment in my life, like ages like 17, 18, 19, where I was kind of bummed because I grew up like overnight. Like I had to be responsible and take care of myself. And like, I like to have fun, but I wasn't, you know, I wasn't out of control. I, you know, so all of a sudden I missed being a kid. And I remember like when it really got bad and I was like having a hard time paying my bills and I was bartending. I started bartending when I was 17.
Oh man.
I remember like calling my friends.
Funny. Oh, you were so young to be handling liquor. I can't believe
people hired me.
Yeah.
But I worked in two different bars and
isn't that against the law?
Absolutely.
Not to be naive.
But you know, I think that you could have been 18, which makes no sense to me that you could work in a bar but not drink in a bar. But I could be wrong. Here we go. Just me.
But either
me
way,
spreading
17,
rumors.
We've established is but a no-go.
Yes,
no,
I worked.
Matter what.
I worked at a super swanky nightclub as a cocktail waitress, and then at this bar in Williamsburg, which is no longer there. And I would freak out. I'd come home and like I was really proud. I didn't like to ask my parents for help unless I really needed it. And I'd call my friends and I'd say, like, to try and like find some sort of connection, you know, because I was so lonely. All my friends in New York were like 10 years older than me. And I loved them, but like I always wanted to act like more mature.
Sure.
So I would really like make an effort to watch everything I said and listen. And even though like I love my friends and we all like I have genuine friendships with, you know, my old buddies in New York, but those are my older friends. And then I'd call my friends in Ohio and just to connect. And I'd be like, what are you guys doing? And they're like, well, I can't figure out who to take to homecoming. I think I'm going to go with Billy, but I might go with Tommy. And they're like, what's up with you? And I'm like, I can't pay my rent. And like, all I can afford is cereal.
And were you still like taking classes and stuff during this process?
Well,
or how did that? Wait, you know what? In fact, let me back up for a second. I would just love to know, you know, freshman, sophomore year, just love to know a little bit about, you said you played soccer. I'd love to just get a tiny picture of what that life was like for you. And totally. Then how it developed into, oh my gosh, this is a thing where all of a sudden I'm moving to a really metropolitan city.
Well, I
elsewhere.
Did. I was an average student. I played soccer. I did local modeling. I started that when I was 14. So I, like several times, like maybe once a week, I would like miss half a day. I missed a lot of school and it started to become a problem because I was working and I was, you know, accumulating a decent savings and like it was all local stuff. Like I was in like the Value City department store ads or like Claire's Boutique.
Adorable.
And it was really funny. And the summer before my junior year, well, high school, we'll talk high school. I guess my high school consisted of really cool kids. Like there were like the popular kids. And every once in a while, like I'd get into a party and like just try and play it cool. But I was always so goddamn self-aware. And like, I never knew what to do with my hands. Like I always remember being like I needed to hold something or have a pocket or a sweatshirt because like, my hands were just out. I didn't know what to do with them.
I get it, but that's so interesting that you had started modeling already at 14 because it seems like that was not
a ticket to popularity by any stretch.
But also like the confidence to be on camera. I mean, a lot of people are fine with their hands until they're on camera and then they don't know what to do with their hands. Do you remember feeling self-conscious when you were working or was it
No, I felt just
it really
at home.
Was interesting. Interesting.
But I think with the kids at school, the really cool ones, and I was boy crazy like a mother. Like, can I say that?
Yeah,
on
you
here?
Can.
Okay, I didn't
Definitely.
Know JV Club because I said the fuck word and I love that word. no, I just, it's funny. I also didn't really like to I would kind of dumb it down like when I was in public at school because I didn't think that being a model was something that was, that made me cool. You know what I mean? It was something I did and I was embarrassed by it a little bit because, you know, there's a stigma attached to it. And I just wanted kids to like, I wanted my friends and, you know, to like me as a person, you know, that sounds really weird, but I always felt uncomfortable. Like I didn't like to talk about it, you know, but I was always excited, like, you know, about jobs and things. But like when I was in high school, I just wanted to be a kid, you know, play soccer.
Sure.
I was terrible.
You were terrible at soccer?
Yeah. I'd like to think I was good, but I wasn't.
Oh.
But I had a blast.
You still loved it.
Oh, my God. I really, like, I remember getting so pumped up for games. And, like, when you had an away game and you were on the bus, I'd listen to, like, the Beastie Boys or something and just, like, really, like, get... like,
getting in the zone.
Like, you feel like you're a professional athlete.
Oh,
you know what I mean?
I love it.
Everybody's got their tracksuit. And you've got, you know, you've got your gear. Having gear for anything is fun, except when you have to carry amplifiers around. That sucks.
I was going
to
say, you really found out about the gear later on. Yeah. Yeah. So so soccer somehow made you feel legit in a very specific way, and you didn't like necessarily talking so much about the kind of professional model-y stuff that was going on. And then did it just become apparent that you could work more and that you wanted to pursue that while you still kind of could, or well, in terms of New York?
I spent my summer before junior year in Japan. I was scouted by an agency and I spent like 6 weeks in Tokyo, which was pretty insane because
that's amazing.
Like my, and you know, again, my folks went with me the first week. They stayed for a week to make sure that their daughter wasn't going to be, you know, kidnapped by Asians.
Right. I'm sure they were like, okay, this is a big deal.
I'm sure that lots of models could literally, like, younger girls, and I'm certain, like, from Italy, from Paris, you know, they would show up for their time there. It's like you're kind of hired by contract for 6 weeks. And then there are other agencies that come looking for girls, and they could be like, all right, we're going to fly in 6 weeks, and we're going to fly you to Milan, and we're going to have you there for 2 months. And like, if I wanted to have done that, I probably could have been like, hey, mom, dad, just so you know, I'm not coming home. I'm going to go here, which would have been, you know, pretty horrendous. But, they went with me, made sure I was okay. I had this incredible experience. I didn't work very much. I had a, like, you know, here and there. I wasn't like, you know, it's kind of one of those things. If you're not the perfect fit, you'll sort of dabble. Mm-hmm. And when I came back to Ohio, my mother took me to New York because I really wanted to go. And there were some contacts I had there. And we just kind of had this crazy experience of people being like, you know, impressed with the work I'd done and saying that you could easily live here and work, but you have to live here. You can't commute. And when I was a kid, and I'm still this way, but I'm a little more sober minded with my goals. When I was a kid, there was just like nothing. I was so determined and I wanted it so badly. And my parents were always so supportive. Like, I would do plays and I was in orchestra and I was, you know, doing theater and stuff. And they were always so just behind me 100%. And I remember we sat at the kitchen table and we had this conversation for like 3 hours about like my person, about me and like what I'm capable of and like my strengths and like, you know, even like talking about like drugs and sex. And they're like, this is New York City. You're 16. We're talking about you living there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we have to talk about these things. And that was something that was a really cool thing about my family and still is that we have a lot of dialogue with our feelings. And there was so much, you know, trust in me. And I really valued that because I was a fucking kid, you know?
Yeah. And let me ask this. Do you think that your parents would have let one of your other sisters do this? Or is it like you kind of lucked out in a sense that they were so seasoned by the time they had you? They had three other girls and was it like, okay, we kind of know that our kids turn out okay and we kind of know things are going
to
be okay?
I would hate to hoe my sisters right now, but we're so different. My two older sisters I grew up with, I don't think either of them... I don't know. I just remember when they got in trouble, it was like really bad. Like it was like things were thrown and out of anger in the house. Mm. And I don't know. I was always that kid that like, if I came home and my dad was like, are you high? I'd say, yes. Yes, dad, I am. And he'd be like, go to your room. And I'd be like, I'm sorry, still a virgin. Hey. Like, we just had this rapport of like.
You were honest. You were a bit of an open
book.
When
I came back from Japan, I remember I told my parents, I was like, mom, dad, I did ecstasy. It was awesome. It was only one time. I won't do it again because it was so awesome. And also, I'm still a virgin.
Oh, you laid it all out.
I drank a lot of alcohol. Out. I learned that I don't like Zambuca. It makes me sick.
You basically gave them a book report. Because at that point, you weren't in school in a regular sort of a way.
It's funny. I had to learn how to stop giving them book reports after a while. I was like, you know what? I don't need to tell you guys these things anymore.
That's probably true, too.
I'm a grown-ass woman.
Yeah, mom. That's definitely true. So you moved to New York when you were 16. And then were you just there? Obviously we've covered Japan, mm-hmm. and then New York, and then until when?
So I actually moved in a week before September 11th, which was pretty intense to be there for that horrible experience. But it was, you know, an interesting time because the city was so, there's just this awareness afterwards of people. And I just remember this, like, I didn't really know the town before, but there was this like overwhelming just consideration for each other and kindness, which was really cool. But I was there for 2 years and got to experience all these great things. I started studying acting and I actually started working as an actress, which was really crazy. And my first job was on Law and Order.
Love it.
And I was... I fell in love with my first boyfriend and he was moving to LA and I followed him out here when I was 18, almost 19. And then we broke up.
And, as it sometimes goes.
Yeah. It was pretty crazy. Have I ever told you this story? Uh-uh. Like, this is so weird. Uh-uh. This is like, we're really talking about this. I moved here in 2003. Ironically, that's kind of, I think if I lived in New York, and I say this with all humility, because I'm sure, you know, I would have had my struggles, but I was really doing well as an actress. Like, I was in line for all the indie films. I was like auditioning next to Jesse Eisenberg. I just played Emil Hirsch's girlfriend in this movie, this independent film. And I was like, I had great rapport with the casting directors. And when I left New York for LA, it was like, I had no friends here. None of, like, as far as the industry is concerned, like, it was probably a dumb move for me to do that. But
you were in love.
I was in love and I was heartbroken, just devastated. And which was so funny, but I started to write songs and I could always sing. And I could play guitar a little bit. I liked as a hobby, but I never ever thought for a second that I wanted to do that. Cause I was an actress. That was like my thing. Yeah. And it just became this incredibly cathartic, necessary part. And I wrote terrible songs. They were pathetic.
You gotta write terrible songs.
Oh my God.
Songs.
It was like.
We should have a terrible
every
song.
Every cliche
off
you could think of like tears and wine.
Oh, bless.
So bad.
I wrote a song when I was 18 yes. that I was very over the top. Like I wanted to not do what I was afraid I would do, which is oversimplify things. Okay. So I went too far in the opposite direction sometimes.
So you were
and
very
got
poetic.
Kind of obscure. Because
like the rhythm of the cello moves your soul.
I wanted to be like, you know, Emily Saliers or Joni Mitchell or somebody who awesome. Was like, here's what I wanted. I wanted my songs to just stand alone as poetry. Like even if there was no music to go with them.
There you go.
And so I had one that was like my biggest hit at the coffee houses.
Oh my God.
That was called Finding Myself Eve. And it was all about like being tempted by the serpent and like all these other women in history who were sort of led down the wrong path by the wrong man. I mean, it was just like epic. It was so stupid.
You know what though? Like, God bless you, man. Like that, but if that was your truth at the time and you owned it, you know, we're always going to change. You know what? Like, we're not going to wear the same cargo shorts that we used to wear 15 years ago. Or whatever, you know. We just
so
like,
cathartic. I will say that, and I'm sure that was your experience also.
Oh yeah, and you know, you can't trade that for anything. Those were that's the real jam.
The difference is that you developed all of that into a legitimate career as a musician.
I had a lot of help along the way, but you know, you gotta, but that's like, I feel like in general in life, like, you know, the things we were crying about or singing about 10 years ago, you know, they change. Or they don't.
Right.
I don't know.
Or they change for a little while and then they come feet. Back and you go, wait a minute, you, I thought I outgrew this feeling.
Yeah, what are you doing here?
Yeah.
Get back in your time machine.
Yeah. So that's interesting. I guess I didn't know that you, I certainly knew about the modeling and I knew about the acting, but I assumed all the while you were also a musician. Like, I think I was anticipating you saying about so high funny. School. Because the orchestration,
but I sang secretly.
Okay,
I was so afraid to sing in front of anybody. But man, when I had the house to myself, I would sing all day,
sliding around in your socks on that wood floor. Sing.
And I would listen to Mariah Carey and Whitney Houston and like try and match them vocally. And I would just learn. I just kind of like learned how to what it felt like. I didn't really. Do you know what I mean? Like, yes. It was weird.
I feel that's exactly the same way I kind of learned at all. Either.
That's. I think that's great. You know, you use your ears and your, you know, your young feminine emotions.
Yeah, absolutely. So you were. I know you started writing songs then when you came to LA. But did you do other writing when you were younger? Like, did you keep a journal when you were traveling? Did you kind of make memories in that way?
I started avidly keeping a journal when I was in New York, and I had like a Dear Diary when I was in high school, and I remember my mom read it, and I was like, "You ho, how could you?"
But so it
was
something. She read it.
She totally did. She was that. Mine. She was that ho.
But how did you find out that she did?
I think my sister told me or somebody. You know, it's hard to keep secrets in my house.
Yeah. Well, how did you have privacy when you were growing up? Did you?
Oh yeah, I had my own room, but you know, everybody was always aware of everybody, you know, like I remember my sister Jody getting her heart broken and it being the saddest thing because she cried and cried and cried and cried. And like, I remember sitting outside her room and my mother was there and I looked at my mom, like, what do we do? How do we fix it? You know? And she was always like,
don't bother me. I'm reading your journal.
And she would, yeah, right. Probably. I love my mother. She's great, but she's, you know, she's funny.
How could you? But you know what? As a parent, that is like, talk about finding myself Eve. I mean, she was presented with the serpent presented her with the apple. How do you, by the way, I want to make it clear that I don't believe in the Bible and I don't mean any disrespect to anyone who does, but I don't want to misrepresent myself as a creationist.
We have to hear this.
But you're a parent and there's your child's diary sitting there. That has got to be a serious exercise.
I'm sure a great mystery if you have daughters is, are they having sex? But if I was having sex, I would have told my mother because that's the kind of kid I was.
That's what's interesting. It sounds like you told them everything anyway. So it makes me think, did she just kind of think she had a right to? Like, Suzanne tells me everything anyway. Or was maybe there's something she's not telling me?
I don't know what goes on in her brain, but, you know, I mean, I'm sure at the time, you know, actually there was a time, I'll bet you this is why she read it. My mother and I did not get along for like 2 years. Like we had horrible screaming matches. There was a lot of yelling at my house growing up. Italian, I think just loud people in general. And I remember I loathed my mother for a long time and we just didn't get along as
people. What age was this?
I want to say like 14, 15.
And so you were still at the house, obviously.
Yes. And I was spending a lot of time with my mother because she was constantly driving me to modeling jobs. And so we'd have these like just stalemates of, or like Cold War, not a stalemate. Let me rephrase that. I misspoke. And like, I bet the motivation was like, I wonder what Suzanne, what kind of shit she has to say about me. And so it probably funny. Said, dear mom, I hate you. Stop reading my journal. If I was
touché.
No, I love my mom. She's great.
Do you think about that when you do? I mean, I don't know how, I guess, how do you think about having kids? Is that something that's important to you?
Well, you know, it's funny. I was a nanny here in LA for a long time. So I've had a lot of experience raising children, not my own. And I do think about kids, but I really think that, like, I'm going to be a late bloomer in that respect because there's so much I want to do with my career.
I think so many of us have and are.
And I also feel like children, you know, is something just in my world that, like, it's not something I want to plan for. I have to be with someone that I want to make a baby with. Right. You know what I mean?
Like, it's more, that'll be more organic about, than having it kind of like an age in mind or a goal in mind.
It's more like the person I'm going to be with, if that's the lifestyle we're going to choose as a couple, you know, if, so when Josh Hartnett and I decide that we want to have children, I want it to be, you know, something that both of us are deciding together.
This is good. I'm getting a good sense. Just even in the last week or so, because Suzanne stayed with me.
Did I talk about him last
week? No, you didn't talk about him last week, but I just have a sense based movies that we've watched and stuff. I'm getting a good picture of your type, which I don't feel like I have a type in that same way.
I like tall, dark, and handsome.
You do. That's exactly what I was going to say.
And men who can throw footballs.
Well, you were in the right time to have like a full beard because seems like everybody's got one.
It's high times for beard.
It's a good time for beards.
It's really funny.
It's a really good time. 70s would have been.
It has to be the right beard. Some beards, like, I have very sensitive skin, and they can really fuck with my face.
Yeah, that's the problem, is that, like, sometimes I like the way facial hair looks until I'm interacting with it, and then it's a struggle.
If they're a hard kisser, like, it's a big no-no if you give me a smooch, and when we're done, it looks like I got a lip wax.
Yeah.
That's a problem.
We've talked on the podcast before about first kisses in high school, and that is what, like, I was talking about that with June, that we just both thought that kissing was, you end up with just a slimy, wet, cold ring around most of your face.
That's
and
funny.
That it's chafed because,
in the,
like,
beginning?
Yeah, like, oh, guys don't really maybe know as much about how to kiss, and probably we didn't either.
Smack teeth. I remember when I first started kissing, hitting the teeth and being like, oh my God, did I just chip my tooth? And then it just being like such a weird sensation, like touching teeth.
Did you ever have braces?
No, I didn't.
I had braces, but I think I wasn't really kissing when I had braces. Maybe just smooching.
A little more lippy.
Yeah, but I don't think I ever, but when I was in college, I dated a guy who still had braces.
Oh, good for you.
Well.
Take one for the team.
Yeah, you know what? It didn't really, it's like it kind of didn't bother me. It was a weird time. College was a weird time. I was just kind of all over the place.
Lots of acid.
Well, he was, not in college. By then I had given it up. I had given it up. But that's no, but this was like a guy who, because when I say he had braces, I think you get a certain picture in your head about what that means. But he.
Was it like Invisalign?
No, it was straight up braces. Okay. It was straight up braces, but he also had like long curly hair. He sort of had like an Eddie Vedder thing. Like,
oh,
it's
good
weird.
For him.
And he was in a band and he lived in a house where everyone in the house was in a different band from one another. So it was just a lot of sitting around and smoking pot and like playing songs and jamming, which I know I've talked to you about. Like, oh, I kind of miss that.
Oh, yeah.
The ease with which people would just start playing instruments because I'm so self conscious about
Dave
that
Matthews
stuff.
Back then, right?
Well, I'll tell you, it wasn't so much Dave Matthews, but it was absolutely Fish. It was the Grateful Dead and it was Fish.
Oh my God.
This was definitely even more hippie-ish than Dave Matthews.
So
like tie-dye tapestries on their ceilings
did
and growing their own weed and they brewed their own beer. I definitely wore hemp necklaces.
And puka shells?
I never wore puka shells.
Thank God.
I associated that with like stupid surfer guys.
I'm just kidding.
That would have been fair. That would have been fair. Yeah, what was your style like when you were in high school and then when you went to New York?
I'm not done asking you about your hemp wear.
The listeners may recall that I worked at a bead store when I was when I was in college in a small mountain town, Flagstaff. And
love Flagstaff.
Yeah, and so that's what that world is. It's all about like Grateful Dead
there.
Bear stickers. I never liked the Dead, but it's a beautiful city, a beautiful town. And I worked at a bead store, so you can bet I was making all kinds of hemp jewelry and other kinds of jewelry, not just hemp.
I like that a lot.
Let's get back to you. What was your style like when you were a freshman and a sophomore?
I wore a lot of Abercrombie and Fitch shirts. That's like what the kids did. It's so lame. But I will tell you, I started...
Like flannels?
It would be like like a long sleeve shirt, like in wintertime, long sleeve shirt, and it would just say like A&F on it.
Okay.
Or yeah, there. I was more sweaters because for school, for our uniforms, like you could only express yourself.
Yeah, I was going to assume that you had a dress code,
but with the dress code, it was so ugly. It was a fugly skirt. It was brown. We had brown skirts and like flannel material, like or wool, excuse me. And
is it were they pleated? Flannel?
Pleated, yes.
At least they were pleated. I like a pleat.
Yeah, they were pleated. And you could wear whatever kind of socks you wanted.
Well,
so that was like bring it on. I had monkey socks; those were my favorites. Lots of knee highs and stuff like that. And then you had to wear a solid color button down shirt, but you could wear any color. You know, so the girls across the board, I mean, their skirts were just up their asses. They were just, you'd roll your skirt so it would be short.
I would never have rolled my skirt. I was so self-conscious about my legs.
I would wear shorts under my skirt sometimes just because like there were lots of phases where the guys would flip your skirt and I was like, oh my God, what if I have like not cute undies on? And my undies weren't cute anyway, I'm sure, because I didn't know anything about cute undies when I was 14. But my style started to change the more I started to model, the more I started to like pay attention to beauty magazines and Vogue. And I don't even know what possessed me to do this, but I started going to Salvation Army and I got so excited because I would find I remember finding an old Oscar de la Renta skirt for $2.99 at Salvation Army. And all of a sudden I was like collecting things and like, I was like, oh my God, mom, look, I was like, this sweater looks like that $600 sweater in this magazine. I found like, I just really had great joy and pride from finding these little treasures. And I still do. Like I go to that same Salvation Army when I go home and I usually get like incredible cowboy shirts and things that I just wear all the time.
It's gold mine.
And, so that started to become part of my, you know, integrating my style to express myself.
Did you ever feel, I mean, you know, modeling, I've talked to somebody else who did a lot of modeling and, I'm just wondering if that, because you're very together and you're just very down to earth and yada, yada, yada. I mean, so far I haven't really been drawn to have someone on the podcast that I would consider, you know, vapid or anything like that. But, and by the way, the whole modeling reputation is totally unfair.
Touche.
I guess I did a tiny little bit myself, but I could just never have called myself a model. I just didn't work enough to ever say that, but
idiots. They were all idiots.
Well,
they didn't know what they had when they had it.
Is that true?
Is that true about you?
Oh! I thought you were saying like other girls just didn't know what they had when they had it. But I mean, did you have times when you felt like, oh, my weight is an issue, or I'm not as pretty as this other girl, or why did she get a job and I didn't, or did you just somehow, was your upbringing so healthy that you didn't necessarily fall prey to that stuff, which seems like it would have a magnifying glass on it as a young model?
You know, when I was super young, I was so naturally thin just from, it was 14. I never thought about it then. I remember when I went to Japan, they said I was a little too big. And my first week there, there was this temple and there was like, I'm telling you, like 1,000 steps to the temple. And I ran up and down the stairs all week and I ate, instead of eating McDonald's, I had like yogurt and fruit and sandwiches. But like, I just changed, like, but when I was so young, when like the slightest change in my diet and exercise, I like slimmed up overnight. And I was never, ever unhealthy. That was something that was really important to me. I love food. I'm Italian. Like I can't not eat. And so exercise started to become something that eventually I did have to start exercising. But I will tell you that when I turned 18 was when I stopped modeling altogether. Not, you know, on the nose 18, but my body had started to change. Like I was getting hips, and the modeling world doesn't have much room for curves when you're that age.
Sure.
And I just remember having this choice, and they, you know, it's, you take a lot of heat. Like I remember being measured in front of everybody.
God, I just,
so they had a measuring tape around my hips, and there's like eight other girls standing there, and they look at me and they shake their head, and it's like, they're like, you got to lose 2 inches. And, I kind of was done with it. When I was avidly working, I think I got most, like I was pretty. I looked like every other girl, but I, you know, I feel like I had more fun winning people over being funny and like trying to make them laugh. And just like, I loved being there. So I just wanted to like joke with them. And I think I got a lot of jobs out of just being a goofball and people liking me, which was fun. So, you know, I had like regular clients. Like I worked for Macy's pretty often and things like that. But eventually the disillusionment of how the fun, it's not a disillusion, but you know, I wanted to do other things, and I didn't want to work that hard to sacrifice my everyday comforts of what I was eating. And
it's impressive that you had the presence of mind to be able to do what I think we all still continue to struggle with, or at least I do, which is that finding that balance and figuring out, are the sacrifices worth the rewards? And I think it's really easy to lose sight of that and start to choose things for the wrong reasons and to kind of punish yourself for stuff. Yeah. And the joy leaves it. And so for you to be able to kind of make an informed decision and recognize that your values were changing, or that your body was changing, or that the times were changing, your age, yeah, and all of that, where it just became,
well,
not,
I mean,
as, you know, not as exciting or not as...
We all have the propensity to drive ourselves crazy. And I think that, I don't know what it is, but I want to be happy as much as I possibly can. And when I'm not happy, I don't cut corners. I have to figure that shit out. And body image issues are huge, especially living in a place like LA or New York and having had been a model. But like, really, you know, you find your buffalo. It's your reminder of what, you know, is meaningful to you or what makes you feel beautiful. And, you know, to be honest with you, I just got off the road and I was feeling really crappy. You know, my skin wasn't as good, and I gained a little bit of weight because I sprained my ankle and I couldn't run. And I was feeling like really, really down. And last week I went to my friend got me a massage at this spa, and it's a hot springs spa. And I think I told you about this. And it's, you know, basically it's, there's naked ladies walking around. You're like, there's hot springs. You're in the hot tub. You're in the cold tub. There's a sauna. And I, you know, not in any kind of pervy, weird way. Actually, I was totally pervy. Kidding. But there was there were all these women of all different shapes and sizes, and everybody was naked, and I'm like larger women. Mm-hmm. And everybody was so fucking beautiful. And I just remember thinking, oh my God, like, it's so amazing to be here. And I really appreciated just being a woman and whatever, you know, imperfection that I drive myself crazy over, nobody fucking sees that.
Yeah.
And what's the point? Like, if you can slim up, you know, if you want to, and I do, but like, when I make myself feel bad about it, that's where the shift needs to be made.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Like, make yourself feel good. Don't beat yourself up.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just,
and be kind to yourself about, yeah, any change you want to make. No, make sure you're doing it for the right reasons and that you're, you know,
absolutely. It's like you said, just balance with everything. You know,
I love that. I love that moment. I feel that way too about places like that. There's a place in San Francisco that's like that, and there is something so satisfying about just the vulnerability and the kind of like second nature of just kind of being naked with a bunch of ladies,
oh, yeah,
and old ladies and young ladies, and just every shape and size and race and all, well, I mean, all of that. It's just like, it just feels so, if you'd think that it would feel uncomfortable. And yet if you just let yourself be present to it, it feels almost like the most natural thing.
Oh my
world.
God. Well, and they've been doing it for centuries. You know what I mean? This is like, it's like Roman times, but, Americans, it's not as common, a event.
Yeah.
So when it is, it's so new to you or myself, but you know, you meet people that live in France or Italy or, you know, just European culture is a little more, you know, kind of open-minded with that sort of thing. Korean spas. But I,
and mine was, yeah, mine's Japanese.
Yeah, it's incredible. Yeah. It is. And, you know, I support any opportunity to treat yourself and feel beautiful, you know. Obviously, you got to work hard and do all those things. But, yeah, that's, yeah, naked lady hangouts are great.
Naked
Why
lady
are we wearing
hangouts?
Clothes right now, Janet?
Who's to say we are? Nobody has to know.
You will never know.
We're not. Okay, so let's get back to the music a little bit, because I'm sure now that everybody's heard that song, and I'm going to play another one. What did you know that the kind of, I hate to use words like genre or, you know, the style of music or whatever that Honey Honey has embraced or has forged, you know, ahead with as it creates its own sound. Did you know when you started writing songs, like, these are my influences, or this is what I like, or this is how I like to hear my, this is the context in which I like to hear my voice? Or were you kind of all over the place? And then did you hone, and when did you meet Ben, the guy that you write with and that you sing with?
Well, when I first started writing, I can't say that I like fashioned myself after anyone other than, my voice was all over the place, because it's kind of like I've got some strength, so I just didn't know how to.
I mean, you mentioned Whitney Houston and Mariah Carey, but were there other?
I definitely had a lot of belting. I did, like, I remember each song would always have like a peak to it. You know what I mean? Like it would be like this. And then, like, come back down and I will end so quietly.
Uh-huh.
You know, type thing. But I just remember writing songs in particular for this one man, and I wanted him to hear them. Like, that was like my motivation of just like, I'm in so much pain. I loved him so much. It was my first heartbreak, and he was older than me, and, you know, in a way that, like, it was an adult relationship, but like my first adult relationship. And
I'm calling up this image of Lily Taylor and Say Anything.
Yeah.
She's like, Joe.
It was just,
Joe, you broke my heart, Joe.
So good. It was pretty close. Well, you know what's really funny is I covered my set with whatever sad songs I'd written. I played Hallelujah by Leonard Cohen, which is so embarrassing because that's like such a faux pas now. It's like such a no-no. If you play at Hotel Cafe here in LA, there's
a
sign.
Can't. There's a band.
There's a sign that says, please refrain from singing Hallelujah. Just don't do it, which I think is hilarious and so true. It's like, you know, that one song. It's like, I actually really appreciate nowadays playing weird, obscure covers or taking like a rock song and redoing it.
Yeah.
But I, ironically, back then I covered a lot of Sheryl Crow songs, and, in July we get to open up for Sheryl Crow, which is so crazy because she is a Honey Honey fan.
Love it.
And I'm so honored. I can't wait to meet her. And I don't know if I'm going to tell her that.
Oh, I think you eventually will.
I have to, I got to feel her out first.
Knowing it.
I can't reveal all my cards right away.
No, you can let, you could, that could be like towards the end of the tour.
I like to play that game where I don't, I already talked about this, like where I don't know who someone is. It's like, you know,
I've done it.
Scarlett Johansson. Johansson. Is that Spanish? I don't know.
But doesn't part of that come out of, I mean, I think it's, for me, it's a combination of a little bit of pride, of feeling like I would like to be on even footing with someone.
Oh yeah.
Even, particularly someone I respect, mm-hmm. but to be on even footing, and also to feel like some, like in some way, it's not like I meet someone who's super famous and I pretend I don't know who they are, but I do feel like, unless it's somebody like your encounter with Drew Carey, where it just was really important for you to go tell him that you
know
love him.
The really cool ones, I got to be honest, because I make jokes about pretending I don't know anybody. I actually used to do that, but I don't do that anymore. If I respect someone's work, I'm going to tell them. And the really cool ones are not affected by it at all. Like, it's like Drew, when I talked to Drew, he was so humble and just genuine and present. he was asking me what I did and wanted to know about my band. And I thought that was really interesting, because I think a lot of times when you approach someone with flattery, they there's this immediate switch.
Correct.
Where all of a sudden they're going to, and God bless them, you know,
they
what
give
I mean?
You but their business like, face, or they give you their, you're a fan yeah, face or yeah. their, yeah.
And in actuality, they're fans of things too. You know what I mean? And just like when people come up to me or my bandmates, it's such an honor and I'm so grateful, but I do really care about them if we're going to have a conversation. Yeah. 'Cause if I'm going to sit there and talk about myself the whole time, what a jackass, you know? And I bore myself. But anyway.
And so so when did you meet Ben? Oh, yeah. I asked you six questions at once. So no. I've done that many times.
So I was working on a solo project with my friend Todd. And Ben was also working on his solo project with our friend Todd. And separately, and Todd was like, you guys should meet each other. And I think originally he wanted to set us up to date.
And this was how long ago?
Oh, my God. I was probably 20, 21 maybe. Okay. So six, so, 2 years ago.
Nicely
done. I totally lied. but I, met Ben, you know, like once or twice before we actually started writing together, and we kind of did like a, was just like feeling out, you know, writing, and I'd never written with anyone else.
Yeah. That seems like, scary. I mean, it's just a whole new way of, yeah.
So was he, we both really grew well together, but he was much more experienced than I was. He'd already written a whole album.
And at this point, when you met him, were you just playing guitar, or had you started playing the fiddle?
I'd already played fiddle. I started playing fiddle when I was 11.
Oh, so that was you were in the orchestra. Were you playing violin?
I was. Okay. Yes. And then I started playing guitar when I was in New York, like 16, kind of moving around. And then when Ben and I started playing together, I was like, we can't both play the guitar, and you play the guitar really fucking well. I'm gonna embarrass myself. And I played a little mandolin for like a hot second. I shouldn't even say that. No, I tried to play the mandolin. But the banjo, I've always loved traditional country music, and it was something that we thought we'd take for a spin, and I was so bad in the beginning.
Banjo was so hard. It's harder than all the other instruments you listed, like put together.
No way. I mean, they're all what you make of it. I don't think it's, well, I guess it's difficult, but I don't know. It's so funny. I give Ben so much credit. He was so patient with me first when I was sucking.
he saw a diamond in the rough.
I don't know. I think he was like, maybe if I tell her she sucks, she's going to cry. So I'll just tell her it's good. Let's just keep her pacified.
Nice.
I don't know.
But so then so you guys were writing together, and
it moved really fast, really quickly for us. The second song we wrote together is a song called Come On Home, and we close every set with it. It's like one of our biggest songs. Like,
I guess I'm going to have to play Come On Home is maybe the other song. That'll be the song that we finish.
You know what's funny though?
With.
No disrespect to our record, but it didn't, I think like the live version is so much better. The recorded version is nice, but like live, we've changed so many things, and it really like, we've added some different arrangements, and it's just like, it becomes this like, just like, you know, foot stomping thing that's really fun. But we wrote that, and we were like, whoa, this is cool. I like this feel. And we kept going, and we put our songs on MySpace. We did like a couple of recordings, and like we were only working together for like 3 or 4 months when we were getting approached by record companies, which was like really, I was so green, and we were both like, we didn't know what the fuck we were doing. And so we had, you know, trial and error, and, you know, working really hard, and, you know, had one record contract, and we've moved on, and now we have another one, and it's just a weird thing, you know, but like 6 years have gone by, and it's just like a crazy story. I know I'm not being very articulate.
To the contrary. But by the way, I can barely stumble through every single podcast.
I wouldn't trade it for anything though, because if say we blew up on our first record, oh my God, I think it would have been terrible. Like we would have missed so many things, so many of the...
And the pressure probably would have been so different.
Oh my God, all of it. And like, even then, like, I just, what I have now with Ben, as he's my best friend, and as our writing rapport, and just there's so much love and respect for each other, that when we were younger and much more insecure and our communicative skills were not as good, I mean, I would hope to think I wouldn't have, but I probably would have developed, like, you know, just like this ego and this attachment and just a part of the songwriting process that a lot of songwriters have that is limiting to, you know, the experience itself. Because if you have your guard down and you really just write because it's coming from an honest place, that is such a cool thing. And I'm so grateful to have that sometimes. And I sound like an asshole.
What?
No, because I'm like dogging other people. And that's not what I mean. I think with anything that you do, if you're not in touch with your insecurities, you know, you're going to have a problem.
Oh, I agree. Well, look at I think in the music business and in the entertainment business, you see people who get to a level where you just feel like no one's being honest with them anymore.
Yeah.
And you see the work just kind of dissolve in front of you. Like, oh, someone needs to say, but like, they need humility and they need perspective and they need, and that doesn't happen to a lot of wildly successful people. They keep their authenticity and they keep their, right, their raw and their vulnerability, and that's, and great art comes out of it. But then I think also it is like, you know, you have to hold on to that.
Yeah. I mean, I think you can apply that to every aspect of life and every career. If you're not in touch with your humility and, you know, if you're kind of, you know, swimming around in a pool of narcissism and nobody's telling you that you're actually swimming in a shit pool. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That was a bad metaphor. But like,
but in fairness, no one wants to swim in a shit pool. So I think it was fair.
No. And at the end of the day, if nobody's telling you that you're leading with, you know,
with like, ego, basically.
With your ego.
Yeah.
You're still going to have to sit with yourself at the end of the day. Those things can't be buried. And, you know, I love talking about this stuff, but sometimes I get a little insecure that it's going to come off the wrong way because, I mean, I'm as humiliated as they come. You know, everybody, it's just, I think I feel very grateful for all of the hardships and things like that, because they can make you're given an opportunity to make yourself better.
Mm-hmm.
Whether it's something with your family or your boyfriend or your husband or your business partner. And the way you handle, you know, suffering and things like that, can really shape the better parts of yourself. If you do it well, and if you have the right tools, you know, and with music, it's really hard. You know, this lifestyle, I feel like I'm all over the map. Is this okay?
This is actually beautiful because we're rounding up on an hour and I can't think of a better way to wrap it up than talking about being authentic and knowing your voice and not being afraid to experience loss and experience embarrassment and experience humility, you know?
Well, I thank you. Okay. That's good. That's really good.
You're safe.
Okay, good. Well, basically, I think that, you know, authenticity, as you said, whether I'm selling pizzas or I'm, you know, working at the gas station or playing music, whatever career I end up in, hopefully it continues to be music. I like to serve the people, and there's something that feels really good about just spreading goodness and love. And I know I sound like such a hippie, because I'm a total asshole at the same time. Like, I'm crude and I make bad jokes.
You also aren't wearing any hemp right now.
No, so. I'm not. But I did once, once or twice, only one time. But I think that, yeah, being in check with myself as much as I possibly can, as a good listener, as a good friend, you know, girlfriend or whatever, sister, daughter, the more I well-rounded I can make myself, the better I can be at whatever career I'm doing. And I think that a lot of people, you know, I don't know. I shouldn't say a lot of people. I don't know what a lot of people are doing, but I like to meet people who do that, you yeah. know, who just like keep it together. And it's not all about me. And that, you know, I don't know if I said that well.
No. You absolutely did. And I feel like, I'm so crazy nuts in love with the listeners of this podcast and the wonderful things that they've said and the critiques that they've pointed out and all of the great feedback I've been getting. I feel like I can say that you're sitting in a community of people right now, like our people that are into this podcast that totally get that. And that I think are all kind of asking interesting questions and looking at their lives and making choices that serve them and serve their authenticity. And we can all use that reminder. And every time I say something like that, it's just enforcing it in myself, 'cause I need to hear it all the time or I stray off the path. So
that's awesome.
Thank you so much for doing the podcast.
Thank you for having me.
What
I'm
a joy.
So honored.
I will let you determine what the song that I play with the last song that I play will be. If you know what it is, you can give a shout out to it right now off the top of your head,
okay.
Or you can spend time and get back to me later.
Do you want hard rock or ballad?
Doesn't matter. It's totally up to you.
I think we should send them on their way with Don't Know How.
Okay. Is that okay? I love that song.
Okay.
That's the other song I fantasize about singing harmonies with you.
Oh my God, let's do
it. One day. Guys, thank you so much for listening to the podcast once again. Please check out Honey Honey. You can follow them on Twitter at Honey Honey. Their music is astonishing. I hope you get the chance to check them out. At some point, probably this episode will not come out in time for Coachella because that would have to be Thursday's episode and it's not going to be ready.
Tell them about the Angel of Death video that you're in.
But please do, yeah, check out you should be able to Google the Angel of Death video.
By this time it'll be on YouTube.
Yeah, it'll definitely be on YouTube.
And the beautiful Janet Varney.
Well,
makes a little cameo.
I'll tell you, that might not be incentive because these people have had plenty of me, but Padgett Brewster is in it.
Oh, yeah.
And Martin Starr is in it, and Jason Ritter's in it.
Our friend Stephanie Sanditz and Jim Turner.
There's a great, there's a great group of
Ben Jaffe
who are in it. And and it's a great video and it's a great song. So please, acquaint yourselves with the band, and we will see you next time on the podcast.
Bye-bye.
Oh no, I don't know if I'll go with you now. I got buckets of words just to hush out the sound of my heart falling down in bits on the ground. Don't know how I love you when I'm not around. I sold all my clothes to get rid of your smell. I smashed all the clocks that had the right time to tell me how long it has been since we parted ways. Don't know how to leave you when I want to stay. So go, 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 go on without me now. Lose me in the crowd. Oh, I am so, so slow, slow moving like the sound. The words stuck in my mouth. Steady the light. Down and hope it will take. I'm cold rushing water for the levee to break. And the things that should soothe me just wear me away. Don't know how to hold back what I shouldn't say. So go, 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 go on without me now. Lose me in the crowd. Oh, I am so, so slow, slow moving like the sound. The words stuck in my mouth.
Leaving Nerdist.com.